Today, we are looking at Matthew chapter 5. I'm going to move this out of the way. Matthew chapter 5, we're going to talk about look at what Jesus has to say about integrity. Several years ago, I noticed on the news when we were living down in Indiana, there was a city not far from where we lived, and they were wanting to build a large building. It had apartments in it, and they were trying to get people excited about it and get them interested in this. We wanted people to use it, and you know, there was debate: is this good for the city? Is it not good? And there was a thing that came out and said, even the mayor is going to buy one of the apartments. He has signed up, and so you can too. And a few years went by. It took a while to get it built, and you know, there was probably some delays and whatnot in there. But it was getting close to completion, and then there was just a little blurb, probably near the back page somewhere, that said, the mayor's backed out. He's no longer buying an apartment there. And I got to thinking, was he really planning to do that at one point, or were they just trying to sell apartments? I wasn't sure. But it kind of brings into question integrity. You said you were going to buy it, but then he didn't. So let's go ahead and read, first of all, Matthew chapter 5. And I want to remind you that Jesus is still in the Sermon on the Mount. He's went up on a mountainside, sat down, and he's got all these people, and he's continuing. And it's really important that we get that, because it follows a similar pattern here. So let me read, beginning in verse 33. Again, you have heard that it was said to the people long ago, do not break your oath, but fulfill to the Lord the vows you have made. But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king. And do not swear by your head, for you cannot make even one hair white or black. All you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. Well, there's a lot in this passage, and it's a little bit different than the previous ones that we've been looking at. But it does have a lot of similarities. If you remember, a few weeks ago we talked about how it said, do not murder. But then Jesus comes in and says, but more than that, all that anger that leads up to murder, all that anger, you need to deal with that. And then he had this thing about do not commit adultery. And he goes, but it goes farther than that. It's not just not committing adultery. It's also that lust that you have in your mind. I want you to take care of that too. And so there's a similar pattern here, but Jesus kind of hits two things here. First of all, this is taken from Leviticus 19:12. Chapter 19, verse 12 says this, do not swear falsely by my name and so profane the name of your God. I am the Lord. You might also recognize that and say, hey, that sounds very familiar to what I read in the Ten Commandments about taking the Lord's name in vain. And it certainly does. But what we have to understand is that this is an oral culture. There's not that much writing. Now, there were some legal documents that you could get. They had a scribe in the town, so you could go to the scribe and hire him, and he would prepare a legal document for you. But most of the agreements that you had were just oral agreements. Probably you've heard old-timers, I remember back in the day when it was just your word and a handshake. That was all it was. That's what that oral culture does. And so these people that are sitting here listening to Jesus, he says, do not break your oath. Okay, they understood that. And he says, but I tell you, do not even swear an oath at all. And it's like, where does that leave us then? So let's look at a couple of things. First of all, he goes on this list and he says, "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is God's throne, or by earth, for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, or even your own head." Well, what is he talking about there? What happens is the Pharisees loved to swear oaths. This is how you got people to believe you. But then the question is, how do you get out of it? Once you've sworn it, how do you get out of it? Well, the idea was, if you didn't include God's name in it, you're okay. So you could swear by something else and then break your oath and you'd be okay. And so they would start going around and they would say, "I swear by the heavens," or "I swear by the earth," or "I swear by the city of Jerusalem," or "I swear by my own head." I would be a little bit leery about that one, but they would go ahead and do that. And what Jesus is saying, all those things you swear on are God's anyway. So basically, you're not helping your cause at all. God owns all of it. And so just don't even bother. Don't try. This is not a loophole that works. So that's one thing that Jesus is saying here. But he also says, when he says, "But I tell you, do not swear an oath at all," that sounds pretty definitive there. And some people down through history have thought that this means don't swear an oath at all. Not long after Jesus' time, there was a sect called the Essenes who isolated themselves. You've probably heard of the Dead Sea Scrolls. They're the ones who produced that. And they had a strong stance. Don't swear an oath at all. And down through the years, there's been groups. Today, we have the Quakers, and they're very much like that. But I also know a lot of good, solid evangelical Christians that take this very literally. And they will not swear an oath. And what they will do, if they get in a court of law, and they'll say, "Do you solemnly swear?" And they will say, "I'm sorry, but that is against my religious conviction, and I will not do that. I promise I will tell the truth, but I will not swear like you're asking me to. I will not take that oath." And by the way, the court should recognize your right to do that. Chuck Swindoll's a preacher that probably many of you have heard. A lot of people like to listen to him. He's a great preacher. You might have read some of his books. He's written a lot of books. He's a very good writer as well. But this is what he said about his time in the Marines. He said, "My Marine commanding officer called me in and asked me why I had not participated in a particular event that was, in his terms, required of the entire company. As far as I can remember, it was the only time I had directly disobeyed a command. And Captain Birch said to me, 'Who do you think you are?' I answered at that moment, 'Not very much right now. But I want you to know, Captain, why I said I could not participate.' He said, 'Talk fast.' And I did. And I declared my allegiance to Jesus Christ. His mouth literally dropped open, and his final words to me were, 'I admire you. Now get out.'" So, one thing that we read in here about oaths, and I just want you to know that there are some people, solid Bible-believing Christians, who take that absolutely literally, and they're very, very careful about that. Now, I will also say there is another side to that, and I'm not going to tell you which one is right. You're going to have to work that out for yourself. In Matthew 26, verses 63 and 64, I'll just summarize it for you. You can look it up later. But Jesus is on trial before the Sanhedrin. And the high priest says to him that he wants him to swear by God, I think it is there. I should have just turned to it. That he is the Son of Man, that he is the Messiah. And Jesus answers that. He says, well, that's what you say that I am. And some people believe that even by answering in that way, Jesus is answering under oath. And that if he was really going to follow this, he would have said, I'm not going to do that, and then given his answer. But then again, another one is Paul in 2 Corinthians 1:23. And there Paul appears to be taking an oath as he's discussing a topic. And what people will say here is that the point about making an oath that Jesus is talking about is something that is about you and about your integrity. It's not talking about if you walk in and a court wants you to take an oath, you know, they don't know you, and so they might do that. And it's not talking about, you know, people that have no clue who you are, no, they're not in your community, they do not know your history. It's about how you live your life, and that you need to be somebody who lives with integrity. So you'll find both sides to that, and you can work through that yourself. But let's look at the heart behind the command. Again, we had murder, and we looked at the anger behind it. We had adultery, and we looked at lust. And I think what Jesus is getting at here is all this swearing of oaths. Instead, be a person of integrity. Let's look at verse 37 again. It says, all you need to say is simply yes or no. Anything beyond this comes from the evil one. We also see this repeated by James, James chapter 5. And so this is no doubt where he gets that from. But the point is this, if we live with a complete integrity, our oath isn't required. If you are living a life where people find you trustworthy and you are above reproach, it wouldn't be necessary. And that's the standard Jesus is trying to get at here. We need to live that way. He goes on and he says, if an oath is required, it comes from the evil one. And you know, when you think about it, that makes sense. If we live in such a way that we don't have integrity, where does that come from? When we lie, when we cheat, when we do those kinds of things, that's obviously from the evil one. The other side of that is if you don't know somebody and you are requiring an oath from them, why is that? Well, it's because, again, we live in a fallen world, and people have proven themselves time and time again to not have integrity. And so either way, whether it's because of something you've done or because of what others have seen in the world in general, the fact that we even have oaths at all is because of Satan and this fallen world. Well, I want to spend the rest of our time talking about us. Because to live a life of integrity, it's not only the big things, it's also the little things. Kim and I had an interesting discussion about a hypothetical situation that's purely hypothetical. Could never happen. If a guy asks a girl for her phone number, is it okay for her to give another number instead that's not her number? I say absolutely not. She should just say, hey, I'm not giving you my phone number. She should either do that, or she should, if she's going to give a number, she should give her real exact number. Or her real address, or whatever, or her real name, whatever the case may be. Now, Kim has a different view. She says, what if the guy is just really, you know, sleazy, you're just not sure, you don't trust him, and you definitely don't want to give him your number, but you don't want to hurt the person either. So you want to be kind. And so out of the kindness of your heart, you're going to let him down gently, and you know, he'll probably think it was a mistake and never know the difference. And so you see how we can do that? We can get, now I want you to know that I eventually did get her number and her name, her real name, and her address. Although that took a while. She actually had me turning right when I was supposed to turn left. But you know, we get really creative when it comes to getting around integrity sometimes. A lie is to intentionally deceive. And that's important because we often think that deception is okay as long as it isn't technically a lie. So Kim says, did you throw your clothes on the floor? No. I dropped them. Technically, I didn't lie, right? But you see what I've done? I'm intentionally deceptive in that. But you know, we start to do those kinds of things all the time in our lives. We get close to deception when we tell others about our kids. We want our kids to look good. And half the time, I understand. You know, I think it was Brian Regan. He said, yeah, I have two great kids and then a third. But we often aren't honest. Because we want them to look good, because if they look good, then we look good. And this isn't about running down your kids, but I'm just saying is often one of the places where we start to veer a little bit from the truth. Sometimes, someone will come to me, they're very mad about their kid, something happened to their kid. You know, somebody treated them or at least said about them that they were really stubborn. How dare they? And I'll say, is your kid really stubborn? Well, yeah. And it's just one of those places where we can start to deviate because we love them. And so we start deviating from the truth. There's a story that a boy and his mom were going on a trip, and it required a train ride. And as they were approaching the train, the mom said to the kid, said, hey, you're six, but tell them you're five, because people under five ride free. So they got on the train, and they were going along, and the conductor came down the aisle and asked the little boy, how old are you? And he said, I'm five. So mother paid her fare, and the conductor went on. A little bit later in the ride, the conductor came back and just kind of talking to the boy, trying to, make him, enjoy his trip and just about all that. And then he asked this question, so when do you turn six? And the boy said, as soon as I get off this train. We do those kinds of things, and it doesn't seem like it hurts anybody. It seems like it's okay. And the next thing you know, we're off in the weeds. Another area. And, you could probably make a much better list than I can. You could probably make a much longer list. But I think another area we get close to deception is when we present ourselves to others. One guy wrote, in a survey, it was found that 15% of women tinted their hair. 38% wore a wig. 80% wore rouge. 98% wore eyeshadow. 22% wore false eyelashes. 93% wore nail polish. And 100% voted in favor of a resolution condemning any kind of false packaging. Now, first of all, I'm not saying don't wear makeup. I'm not saying that at all. And I'll just stop saying anything more about that. But I do want to ask you to consider why you feel the way you do. If you think, hey, I wear makeup because I like how I look. Fine. I'm okay with that. But if you're wearing makeup because you're trying to hide something that you're ashamed of or something like that, well, now we've got an issue. And I don't mean to be picking on women. Men do the same thing. It might not be makeup. It might be other stuff. But the point is, we like to present to other people an image, and oftentimes that image has nothing to do with who we truly are. You ever see people post a bad a picture of themselves that puts them in a bad light on social media? Uh-uh. There's filters and everything. You don't have to do that. Never happen. And we present this idea to people that everything is fantastic. We present the idea that everything in our marriage is just great. It's the best thing ever. We present the idea that our house is always clean. Kim and I use the 15-minute rule. You have guests coming over, don't take more than 15 minutes to clean your house. That's scary, isn't it? But you see, we do that. We don't even want... I don't know how many people tell me, don't come over. Especially parents who have five young kids. I have four kids. They were young at one point. I know exactly what your house probably looks like. But we don't want to present that to others. So we have this thing about deception, and it starts to grow, and it starts to build, and it starts to become something else entirely. Integrity is also about listening carefully to others and not misrepresenting what they say. Did you hear what so-and-so said? Remember the telephone game? Do they still play that? You'd tell something to the person at the beginning of the line, and they would tell somebody else, and they would tell somebody else, and they would tell somebody else, and by the time you get to the end, it has nothing, it's not even close to what happened at the beginning. Part of integrity is being very, very careful about that. Now, if you're playing telephone game, I don't care what you do. But man, sometimes things get started about people and it's not even close to the truth. And it's because we didn't take the time to check. And if you don't know, don't pass it on. Sometimes it's just a good story. We just can't help ourselves. Now, I also want to address what probably comes up as one of the biggest pushbacks on this. What about Rahab? If you don't remember the story, the Israelites were heading to the Promised Land. They just crossed the Jordan River, and there was a city that they had to get out of the way called Jericho. And they wanted to know what things were like, so they sent spies in. And there was a lady there named Rahab who hid the spies. The security forces in Jericho came along and they said, "Have you seen those Hebrew spies?" And she just lied through her teeth. Then she let the spies down over the wall, and they went back and told them what was going on in Jericho. You probably have heard that story before. Well, everything's good and with that, but then in Hebrews, Rahab is praised as a person of faith. And people are saying, wait a second, she lied. Shouldn't she have told the truth? Now, again, I'm going to give you two responses to that, and you can choose which one we should follow. Some people say, yes, she should have told the truth. That's not what she's being praised for in Hebrews. She's being praised because here she was, somebody, a Canaanite, who recognized that the God of Israel was the true God and switched her allegiance to him. And that's what she's praised for in Hebrews. It doesn't mean that her lie was okay. So that's the one view. The other view is that this isn't talking about a military conflict type situation. Our military has its vehicles painted camo, right? They wear camouflage. We try anything we can to fool our enemy. And that, I don't think, is what Jesus is talking about here. And they would say that Rahab was in a military-type situation, and so it was justified in that case. That would also extend to other military, it's not really military, but conflict-type games. So, for example, in football, don't worry, you can still have play-action pass. You can fake the run and still throw deep. So there would be a little bit of a distinction there. But I want us to close on the whole idea of letting our yes be yes and our no be no. You see, when we look at this passage, when we start out and we start reading all this stuff about oaths, we usually think, good, I'm off the hook. I can go through the rest of the week and not worry about it at all because, you know, I probably am not going to take an oath. I probably won't have to. Maybe your job requires it, but probably not. Most of us, this isn't going to come up. And we have a tendency to take a passage like this and just put it aside and think, well, yeah, that's all true and good and everything, but it's not for me. But when you really look at it, this is about all of us, and it's probably one of the most profound teachings that Jesus gives here. And we just brush it aside. All you need to say is simply yes or no. All you need to say is simply yes or no. And when you think about that and you spend time thinking about that, you realize this is something that it affects every single thing I do. And you begin to realize we happen to be people who are rather deceptive. It's something that's in our nature. We like to deceive. We like to present something that isn't true. Even your dog will pick up on it. And when you start thinking about that, every single thing I do, every single day as I walk through life, am I a person of integrity? Am I a person of integrity when I'm at work and I have my I'm with my coworkers? Am I a person of integrity when I am in my neighborhood? Yeah, I know. Went and blow the snow over in his driveway. Am I a person of integrity with my family even? And this is what Jesus is calling us to. And I want to encourage you to spend the time to just think through how you approach those things in life. Everything from a five-year-old on a train, to everything else we do. Am I a person of integrity? We're going to take communion. And this might be something that is important for you this morning. Because you might have heard this and say, man, Tom, this happens to be a big issue for me. I have lost the respect of so many people. If you got one of these, the elements on the way in, you can go ahead and take the top off of that. But you might be saying, you know, I've lost the respect of people. They don't trust me. I know they don't. I know why they don't. I want you to know that there is hope there. There is grace there. I think of Jesus with his disciples in the upper room. He knows that Peter is going to deny him. He's already told him that it's going to happen. He knows he's going to be abandoned. And yet he still offers this incredible community. He still invites them in. So if you're struggling with this, I want you to know there's hope. The Bible tells us on the night Jesus was betrayed, he was with the disciples in the upper room, and after they had finished, he took the bread and he broke it, and he said, "This represents my body broken for you. Take and eat." Then it says he took the cup and he says, "This represents my blood that is shed for your sins. Take and drink." Father, I just thank you this morning for what you've done for us. That we as an imperfect people, that we as a people who find ourselves in the weeds all the time, are still invited into community with you. That you gave your life, that you shed your blood, that you went through an incredible amount of torture, that your body was broken for us. And so, Father, as we experience that kind of love, help us to be a people of integrity. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.
This has been a message from Gaines Church in Caledonia, Michigan. We'd love to have you join us at one of our Sunday services. Visit GainesChurch.org for more information. One life, one hope, one destination.